This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope your week is off to a good start. And if you'd like to participate in the show, our lines are open. 877-217-5757 is your number wherever you are. If you're calling locally, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Our guest to begin is Felicia Harry, and later we'll hear from J.R. Ball, the executive editor from the Baton Rouge Business Report. But Felicia is involved with the AP Touro chapter of the LSU Alumni Association, and they have a big event this Friday. But before we get to that, the chapter is for African-American graduates mm-hmm. of LSU.
Or anyone who attended.
Or anyone who attended. Mm-hmm. Could I join?
Sure. Well, I'll sign before I leave now. Sign you up.
Okay. I'm all for that. I'm all for diversity. But the LSU campus, as we know, is still not diverse in some areas, particularly the Greek system. There is segregation in the Greek system. But beyond that, there are a lot more African-American students now than there used to be.
Absolutely.
When you were going to school there in the 1970s, Felicia, what was the number of African-American students on campus?
Very low. And
what was very low? Less than 100?
Maybe a little more than that. I don't really know a number, but few and far between. And I was in the journalism school where maybe there were five of us when I was in undergraduate school.
You graduated in 1975.
With a bachelor's degree.
And in 1978.
With a master's degree.
And it's served you well, and you've made LSU proud with your contributions.
Well, I hope so.
And I've been to these events. In fact, I was even the host of one of them years ago, Master of Ceremonies for the Black Alumni Association. There are some impressive people who've come through those doors.
Oh, yes, there are. I'm especially close to Leo Hamilton, who is now president of the Alumni Association Board. And I remember when we were in school, we were diligently trying to get an African-American cultural center that we wanted named Harambe House.
Yes.
But we left LSU, of course, before that came to fruition.
And come Friday, you're going to honor a gentleman named Clarence Barney.
Yes. Clarence Barney was the first African-American chairman of the Board of Supervisors from 1992 to 1993. And while he was on the board, two things happened. The African-American Cultural Center became a reality, and the AP Touro Senior Classroom Building was dedicated.
Very good. He's got quite a past and a worthy person to honor. He was a former Urban League head as well.
Urban League guy, 30-something years in New Orleans.
Yeah. But this is part of the LSU Legends Forum Friday, and it'll take place at the old faculty club.
Yes, now called the club at Union Square. And we've deviated a little bit this year from our program because, you know, normally we have more than one legend mm-hmm. that we honor. This year we're doing only Mr. Barney. And on the same day, immediately preceding our event, there's a renaming and a remarking of the African American Culture Center in his name.
There is an irony that you'll be at the club at Union Square, which is at Highland and Raphael Sims. And
yes.
Sims, of course, was a Confederate war admiral.
Yes, and I know that that's been a point of discussion.
Well, is there some kind of move to change the name?
We have not talked about a move, but we have talked about what you just said, the irony of the location of the African-American Cultural
All right.
Center.
A listener notes that all 18 of LSU's Golden Girls are African-American.
Are not African-American.
Are not African-American. Not African-American. Yeah, that would be a story. But 84% of the team is black. So why do we not have any African-American girls who are Golden Girls?
I don't know. I don't know the process for Golden Girl selection. So
I think they need to be able to dance well.
Think that might not be a problem.
You don't think?
I don't think. Not to stereotype anybody because I'm not a great dancer, but I'm sure if beauty is a requirement, I've been on campus, lots of beautiful African-American young ladies. Maybe we need to do a stronger job of recruiting. I know that they do an aggressive job of recruiting athletes. So, and some people say that cheer is a sport. We could say Golden Girls are somewhat of an athletic team by stretch of the imagination. So maybe we should recruit.
Okay. When Governor Jindal was in office, of the 18 board members, 17 were white, and there were white males, 17 white males and one black female. Is that reflective of Louisiana?
Of course not. Of course not.
Well, how does that occur all these years after A.P. Touro became the first African-American to attend LSU?
I think we still operate in that mainstream society where African Americans are not the norm, although there have been great accomplishments. And as you said earlier, just in the group that came from LSU, there are outstanding people, people we've honored over the years in the AP Touro chapter who would be eligible and I'm sure interested in serving on the board. But we've got to open our eyes and get away from the narrow vision, I think.
A.P. Touro, the student, was famous, but so was his
father.
The mm-hmm. student is still alive, has been a guest on this show.
Yeah. Yes.
But both of them have exceptional stories.
They do. They do. Young A.P. stayed at LSU for about 2 weeks, was ostracized the 2 weeks he was there until the court order was rescinded that put him out of LSU. And he went to Xavier and ultimately left the state to make his career, but has come back and sort of made amends, and LSU has honored him. And so he has said to me that he never thought he would be cheering LSU on at a football game or being recognized for the university. And, of course, those things have come to pass.
Well, he is an active participant now.
He is. He is.
And his father was well-known.
His father was well-known. His father worked with Thurgood Marshall and the likes of that company to desegregate LSU in the 1950s. Although it took some time and some doing, and now we have, of course, a more diverse student body, but we, of course, always want to see more.
Felicia Harry is with us for a few more minutes. And how long have you been involved with the A.P. Touro chapter?
I was a charter member.
Which was when?
In the 80s, not the 70s, 80s, so early 80s.
Been around about 35 years.
I've been around a while.
And this group, you're quite a cohesive collection of people. You know each other pretty well.
We know each other pretty well. We are always recruiting new members. A lot of us were at LSU at the same time, so we have a long-standing history. Some of the members of the chapter I've known since elementary school. Mm-hmm. So we have a long-standing relationship and like-mindedness of thought.
But I don't think it's an unreasonable question to ask, if 84% of the LSU football team is African-American, how can 0% of the Golden Girls be African-American?
And that's a question that's been asked before, because I think over the years there have only been a few Golden Girls, so maybe we need to talk to the guys on the football team. You know, that used to be how they got cheerleaders. You know, they would get the girlfriends of the football players.
Is that right? Kind of a package deal?
Well, yeah, maybe more so in high schools than at the university level. But, you know, if you want to know girls, you ask guys generally.
Well, in some ways, we have advanced dramatically as a people as far as inclusion, but in others, we have not.
We have not, and I'm a little concerned about some of the divisiveness I'm seeing in the country, when I think that we all at heart have the same goals. We want America to be a good country. We all want to thrive and survive here and not be elitist. I don't think that's what the country was founded on.
Well, based on what you know, Felicia, what is it like for an African-American attending LSU today as compared to one who was doing it in the 1970s as you were?
Well, they're much more involved. They have much more, many more opportunities. They are not the exception to the rule. They're more of the norm. And I remember sitting in classes. Matter of fact, I had a class with David Duke. And I remember sitting in classes where the instructors would say, oh, well, we only have one African-American in here, you know. So
you, being
me,
you.
Being me.
Right.
You know, so it was sort of like we were the exception and not the rule. We weren't expected mm-hmm. to be there, and we certainly sometimes weren't expected to do well.
Which class did you attend with Mr. Duke?
It was an advertising class in the journalism department. At the same time that he would be doing Free Speech Alley,
yeah,
you know, talking about what was right and what was better. And I had friends who would challenge him on the steps of the union. I had a particular friend who was had hazel eyes and would often ask him to define exactly what he meant when he said white skin color. And he, of course, you know, would just sort of evade the question and keep talking.
Well, Friday night, once again, Clarence Barney will honored at the what's the name of the faculty club now?
The club at Union Square.
The club at Union
and we're
Square.
Honoring Mr. Barney posthumously.
Yes, he has passed away. But yes. Unfortunately, sometimes people get honors after they're not around,
right.
But he has family
he
and friends.
He has family. He has two sons and a widow.
And it'll be at the club at Union Square at the corner of Highland and Raphael Sims.
Free and open to the public.
6 o'clock Friday night. Felicia Harry, congratulations on the work of the AP Truro chapter of the LSU Alumni Association.
Well, thank you.
We'll return with J.R. Ball, executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And our guest in studio is the executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, J.R. Ball. Business Report is celebrating its 35th anniversary, and the issue is out and about on the newsstands. And J.R. writes about everything in our community and beyond, including the Greek system of LSU, of which he was a distinct member a few years ago.
More than a few, but yes.
You had a high-ranking position, didn't you?
Yes, actually, back in 1983, was the president of the fraternity that is in the news right now, or the former fraternity at LSU that's in the news right now, Phi Delta Theta.
Maxwell Groover, a pledge, died a week and a half ago. The reports are that he was incapacitated at the fraternity house, had essentially drunk himself to death, and probably with some encouragement, and the fraternity has been kicked off campus. Is this the proper move?
Yes, in this instance, yes. You know, the national chapter of Phi Delta Theta has made it clear that hazing and alcohol abuse are specifically prohibited activities. And certainly there was the allowing of alcohol abuse within the fraternity house. And while I don't have any inside information, you know, there is some evidence to suggest that there was some, at least some level of hazing taking place either that evening or in previous nights. So, you know, my view is, yes, it's right to shut the fraternity down. And if criminal charges are warranted against any of the members, then those should be forthcoming as well.
Governor John Bel Edwards is urging the presidents of the state's four university systems to review all policies related to hazing and drug and alcohol abuse among Greek organizations and other sanctioned on-campus groups. In a letter late last week, the governor asked the presidents to inventory their policies, report their findings, and send recommendations to him by October 29th. This is an appropriate action, but do you think this is going to really address the systemic issues that are involved?
I don't know that taking an inventory or anything that's going to come out of the governor's office is going to have any significant impact. At the end of the day, if the goal is to get hazing completely off of college campuses, and I can assure you hazing is not confined to the Greek system, certainly at LSU or at Southern University, then, you know, it is going to require much more than just sort of inventorying at the request of the governor.
Now, 20 years ago, a pledge, Ben Wynn from another fraternity, died after a night of binge drinking at Murphy's. His blood alcohol content was 0.588. He was 20 years old, a little older than Maxwell Groover, but there was a lot of consternation about it and same kind of talk that we have now. And it has been 20 years since we've had one of these incidents. But should they ever happen? And why wasn't this something that changed the fabric of fraternities and sororities forevermore?
Well, there have been an awful lot of changes. I go back to what was allowed when I was at LSU. We had South Sea Island. I mean, there were massive on-campus parties that were allowed by LSU for the fraternities and other groups to hold as well. There has been a – and Benjamin Wynn's death sparked a lot of changes as it related to what fraternities and sororities and other organizations could and could not do on campus as it related to alcohol.
I have a letter from a faculty member who says that she is disturbed at how she calls it one-sided presentation of what's happened. She says LSU has worked diligently and tirelessly the last few years to provide an atmosphere that discourages and punishes hazing practices and drug alcohol abuse by Greek organizations as well as the student body at large. Anyone who thinks only Greeks drink and have the potential to abuse alcohol, never been around the college-age population very much, she writes. LSU actually has one of the most restrictive policies in higher education pertaining to Greek organizations, and it goes on from there. But this has focused a lot of negative attention on the Greek system at large. Is that fair?
Well, I always think it's fine to examine what's going on, but this notion that everybody in a fraternity is a serial rapist who is just getting drunk, drugging women, sexually abusing women, which is sort of the narrative that appears to be taking place. And maybe that's just part of the social media culture where we automatically run to extremes. I think that's a bit dangerous and extremely unfair. And I say that, look, there's nobody justifying the behavior of what went on that night in the Phi Delta Theta house. But at the same time, if we're going to sit there and say, well, that's the reason why we need to remove fraternities from the LSU campus, then I'm going to suggest that given that Mardi Gras is the deadliest state holiday in Louisiana, according to the Highway Safety Council, is it time to ban Mardi Gras from Louisiana? I mean, if we're going to sit there and start saying every time somebody dies, we got to get rid of the behavior, then let's shut down Mardi Gras.
Okay, well, this faculty member also, JR, writes, if you look at the donor list to give back to LSU, it's largely comprised of individuals who were in Greek organizations, Lod Cook, Jim Bernhard, Thomas Turner, Ricky Harrowman, Pete Maravich. The giving history of LSU... The giving history of LSU alumni would be extremely weak without the Greek alumni, as the general LSU alumni population are not known to give back in great numbers. Is that part of this? She probably has a point that Greeks give in larger numbers than the regular student body. Is that why sometimes they're given some latitude that perhaps other organizations would not?
Well, I guess my question is, what are the examples of latitude that fraternities are being given?
Well, there is a 21-year-old drinking age, for example, and they are on a campus that adheres to the laws of the state of Louisiana, and I think a lot of those fraternity members are probably under 21.
Sure, I'm sure they are. I would say, do you think that there are members of the LSU football team under the age of 21 that are drinking? Are the members of the LSU band under the age of 21 who are drinking, or the science club, or Mu Alpha Theta, the math club? Do you think they've ever sat around in an apartment and had had a beer or two?
Probably so.
So, again, I'm just simply suggesting that it's very easy to single out the Greek system because it is this large group of individuals. And in fairness, you know, I think fraternities in some instances go out of their way to try to live up to the Animal House legacy from the movie.
And the segregation is still largely there.
Sure. Yeah, that's still a problem, as it is with the African-American fraternities, yes.
But the African-American fraternities probably started because they were not allowed to enter the other fraternities.
Yeah, look, I'm not here to – yes, that's true. And look, there are many problems that I think that the fraternities are sort of representative of larger societal problems. I think there is far more integration of fraternities at some other campuses than there is at LSU. I think generally in the South, most of the fraternities and sororities are going to generally remain race segregated. I'm not here to defend that. That's true, and we need to get better at that. I don't know if that's a reason why we should suddenly say get them off campus.
Well, It's an issue that is worthy of discussion, and that's why we have J.R. Ball here, executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. Good to have him back home at the Business Report, which is a fine publication. You were there a long time before you came back. How many years?
16.
J.R. also was 11 years associated with Tiger Rag magazine, many of those years as the editor, so I'm sure he'll have some comments about what in the world is going on with the National Football League. Yesterday was an interesting day on the field in the NFL. So if you'd like to comment about the fraternity system at LSU or the sorority system or the system at large, this is your opportunity. 877-217-5757 is your number. Locally, 297-5633, and please send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we'll return after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 is the local dial, and talk@talklouisiana.org. The ongoing probe into the possible alcohol-related hazing death of an 18-year-old LSU freshman could focus on crimes ranging from the illegal sale of alcohol to homicide, depending on how the facts shake out. This story last week in The Advocate from Joe Guyon, and says District Attorney Hiller Moore says it's too soon to know whether charges could be filed against LSU students or others who might have contributed to Maxwell Groover's death. He died after an apparent night of drinking heavily at the Phi Delta Theta house. He died at a hospital, but Phi Delta Theta has been thrown off campus, and former president of that chapter, J.R. Ball, is with us, the executive editor of the Greater Baton Rouge Business Report. J.R. says the action was appropriate. Also, we will talk about situation with the New Orleans Saints, which is gaining news, along with other NFL teams. Many NFL players yesterday protested tweets from President Donald Trump. 877-217-5757, Joe at LSU or near LSU. Joe, you're on the air with J.R. Ball.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Fine.
So I just wanted to say something because I was listening to your program. I'm a member of a Greek organization at LSU, and it is absolutely awful and disturbing what happened to Maxwell Groover. But that just shouldn't paint the Greek community as a whole. I was never asked to do anything I was uncomfortable with, in my organization at least. And I think that by the time you're 18 years old, you should have the sense to walk out of a situation that makes you that uncomfortable. I get peer pressure, but I don't know. I just feel like there comes a point when you know whether or not you're unsafe in a situation, and at 18 you should know when to walk away. But that's all I had to say, guys. My Greek organization has done wonders for me being out of state, and I think it's very unfair what's happening to Greek members, the way we're being just stereotyped overall. But anyway, guys, I'll just give it back to you.
All right, well, which member or which organization were you a part of, Joe?
I'm not going to say. I'd rather not say.
All right.
Thank you all for having me on. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Well, that sentiment, I'm sure, is expressed by many. And here's another note saying, the social networking and the relationships that are fostered remain extremely important and viable throughout a lifetime as a result of participation in Greek life. And J.R., that was one of the big pitching points. I considered joining a fraternity, did not. But I'm sure in many cases it's helped further careers and foster relationships that are important throughout a life.
Without question. I would say, you know, three of my five closest friends I met through my affiliation with the fraternity system, and we have remained close to this day. But it's like any other organization or club. I mean, once you get to know people and you network and make connections, it tends to stick with it. I think the difference – a little bit in a fraternity, similar, and I want to be careful here, but similar to like what happens in an athletic organization, is that because of some of the situations that you deal with in a fraternity, whether that be through intramural sports, whether it be through the non-hazing activities that take place while going through the pledge program, it does develop a bond, and you do develop closer relationships with your brothers than perhaps you might in some other situation. But I can tell you, and I don't know what the covenants of my fraternity allow me to say or not allow me to say as a member, but I can tell you that back in the early 1980s, there was no alcohol related in the initiation process at Phi Delta. There was absolutely none. I'll say the closest we ever got to truly hazing was for weeks. There'd be an empty gallon 7-Up bottle sitting in the restroom in the fraternity house, and people who were prone to dipping or skull or any kind of tobacco would dip their tobacco juice in there, and it would build up. And then there was a night where there was this belief that you were going to drink it. You weren't drinking that, but it came down to trust. If that's hazing, then I'm going to acknowledge, yes, there was hazing going on at Phi Delta in the 1980s when I was there. But that did not involve alcohol, nor was anybody's health at risk, unless you consider imbibing some seaweed problematic.
Well, you have children?
Yes.
Would you recommend that they be Greeks?
Yes, I have no problems with it whatsoever, and I think there are benefits, particularly for individuals who go to out-of-state colleges, which is what my situation was, both at Virginia and LSU. I think there are some immediate short-term benefits that grow from there, so I have no problem. Now, if they choose not to want to be in a fraternity, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, you got to join.
What do you think the future is now for the Greek organizations?
I don't know, because I don't know what the numbers are. I know in other parts of the country, Greek membership is down, and some of that deals with the fact that what you can do within a fraternity or sorority house is much more limited. And so then it sort of becomes more of a cost-benefit analysis for whoever's paying the college tab. Particularly as tuition continues to go up, fraternities aren't free. So all of those things start to factor into just how popular the Greek system remains on different college campuses.
There's a question from Billy asking, did you live in the house when you were?
Yes, I lived in the house for 3 years.
Delta Theta. You, I guess as president, you have to, don't you?
Yes, and then I just enjoyed living in the house. So,
did you?
I lived in there for 3 years.
Yeah, air conditioning worked and all that good stuff, good meals.
Yes. That's why I learned that. It's why I learned to eat okra.
877-217-5757 is your number. And if you have an observation about the Greek system, JR is here to talk about that. But yesterday, a story that is the talk of the nation involved NFL teams all across the land. But in Charlotte, North Carolina, 15 Saints participated in a national anthem protest. They can be seen sitting on the bench from photographs in yesterday's game against the Panthers, a victory by the Saints, by the way. But at least one restaurant in New Orleans refused to show the Saints game on television in protest of the protest. And President Trump went out of his way to slam these players who were defending Colin Kaepernick. And lo and behold, what happened? But many of them started defending Colin Kaepernick. J.R. Ball, your thoughts about what happened yesterday in the NFL?
I think what happened yesterday, the only difference between yesterday and any of the other previous NFL Sundays is that President Trump decided to make it a major issue. I don't know why he decided that this other than the fact I know this issue is red meat to his base supporters. And maybe it's to divert attention from the way that he can't get anything done from his agenda. I mean, everything he's promised to do when he was on the campaign trail is not happening. There's no wall. Obamacare continues to exist. So one of the ways to divert attention from that is to throw out these red meat issues, which he's great at doing. Bless him for that. And so it was ramped up. But I did not see much more protesting Other than a few select teams, like the Seahawks and the Steelers obviously ramped it up. But, I mean, there have been people kneeling. Saints players have been kneeling since Colin Kaepernick did this last year.
Well, Leonard Fournette took a knee for Jacksonville. Odell Beckham gave a power salute at one point. These are great LSU representatives, and I'm sure this discussion will continue. And today, State Representative Kenny Havert of St. Francisville says he would like to cut millions of state tax dollars, tax exemptions, and tax credits allocated to Saints owner Tom Benson because of what happened yesterday. What do you think of this, J.R. Ball?
I'd be curious to know whatever offers Kenny is going after next, or when he's up for re-election, because this is one of those things you throw out there just to say, let me make sure my base understands that I'm still alive.
This is red meat. He issues a statement that I will read. The very reason they have the privilege and opportunity to play professional football, writes Kenny Havert, while being paid millions, is because someone in uniform died protecting their right to do so. It is a disgrace to the men and women, actually it says men and woman, of this nation and state.
Apparently there's only one who's ever served.
First typo, who have sacrificed so much. Disrespecting our national anthem and flag in the name of social injustice is the highest form of hypocrisy our free society, made possible by our fighting men and women, has made available free education, free lunch, housing, and free health care, and is now being considered socially unjust. It is time the taxpayers quit subsidizing protest on big boy playgrounds. I believe in the right to protest, but not as a taxpayer, or not at a taxpayer-subsidized sporting event. Do it on your own time. There are plenty of disabled children, elderly, and veterans in this state that would appreciate the money. That from Kenny Havert, Republican from St. Francisville. J.R. Ball, I would imagine he knows his base, and this was probably playing pretty well with his base.
Sure. And look, I don't know why it's taking this issue to talk about the amount of state aid that goes to the New Orleans Saints, or, you know, just, I mean, that's a fine conversation to have beyond that. But just from a philosophical standpoint, so if we can separate, and I know this is hard to do, because people just want to dive into the issue itself, but I might suggest that actually, when you look at truly what people who put their lives on the line are fighting for, it is fighting for our ability to gather and protest. So I don't know that I would sit there and say, I think that's the highest form of respect, that we're willing to take it to that level. But again, that's a philosophical argument, and I understand people will go nuts because we're now dealing with issues beyond taking a knee, such as who is taking that knee.
All right, we'll talk more about this. Saints get a lot of tax help from the state. Kenny Havert says it's time to take it away because of the protests of 15 players yesterday. 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing. 877-217-5757 is your number anywhere, and locally 297-5633. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. J.R. Ball, our guest for the final segment, as he has been the last few, the executive editor of the Greater Baton Rouge Business Report. And we've gotten some emails regarding both subjects we have touched upon, the Greek system and the Saints and the NFL players protesting the statement yesterday by Donald Trump in a tweet. He basically said, and he used the word SOB, saying that they should be kicked out of the league if they protested during the national anthem. 877-217-5757. And now, Kenny Havert, State Representative Republican from St. Francisville, whose offices are in lovely Jackson, Louisiana, he says he wants to cut millions of state tax dollars, tax exemptions, and tax credits to the Saints organization, the NFL, and any associated facilities that receive state funding. That would include Benson Tower in New Orleans, where state offices are located as part of the deal with Tom Benson, the crafty owner of the New Orleans Saints. You think Havert will get any traction from this, J.R. Ball?
He'll probably get some with his voters, but I mean, in terms of actually something happening, I mean, what I would find interesting would be to ask him, well, why, forget the protest, why are you picking the Saints over giving money to the disabled children, elderly, and veterans in this state that he acknowledges would appreciate the money? So, I mean, he and his fellow legislators have already said giving Tom Benson tax breaks is more important than the disabled, the elderly, and the vets of this state. So,
all right, and the listener notes that Representative Habert is the same gentleman who last year called for restrictions on strippers in Louisiana.
And there may be strippers who need some money. So, I mean, again, there's more money to throw around.
Okay. We're moving around because I'm getting emails on both subjects, but here's one from Sally writing, in addition to alcohol abuse problems, what about the academic cheating that goes on in fraternities and sororities? Test sharing, for example, violates academic integrity standards. And Sally continues, underage drinking around the LSU campus is ubiquitous. Adults enable this state of affairs. Her response to Sally.
Sure. I think any organization or any individuals who are caught violating the academic honor code should be removed. And so it's very easy to say, again, what I protest, if you will, is this notion that the only place any of this activity is happening is in fraternity and sorority houses. And that's just not true. I think there are interesting points that are being raised. I just think they should be addressed at a campus-wide level and just not in this isolated world of the Greek system.
Well, the responses that we're getting indicate, as well as what's going on in the country at large, there's a lot of anger in this country right now, JR. What do you think the root of this is?
I think generally we have a middle class that is not seeing its wages increase, and so you have a very nervous middle class that has not been helped as we have left the manufacturing revolution or the industrial revolution and moved into a technology-driven revolution that's powering a global economy. But anyway, the globalization of the economy and the shift from the industrial to research technology has not worked out well for the middle class as it relates to increasing prosperity. So you have a very nervous middle class. And one thing that Donald Trump has done a very good job of doing is tapping into that angst. And is saying, these are all the people that are the blame for your problem. And he's very good at doing that. So he revs that all up. So I've always felt that was it, which would have found interesting. And it depends on where you're at regionally. But as the middle class, and it's usually the true middle to lower middle class that we're talking about here, you know, they tend to want to find somebody to blame. In some parts of the country, they blame the one percenters, Wall Street. In other parts of the country, particularly in the South, and again, I'm not from here, and I'll defer to others as to explaining all as to why, but people can make their own guesses. Here, the anger seems to be directed towards the poor, which in Louisiana is largely African American. So, but we're always, that's, I think, at the root. Now, I'm sure there are people far smarter than I that can point out hundreds of other reasons.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And this is a subject that I'm sure is going to continue for some time regarding the NFL. The New York Times today in its op-ed page writes, Sunday's revolt against Mr. Trump was not quite a victory for Colin Kaepernick. No team has even offered him a backup position despite a striking level of mediocrity among even many starting quarterbacks. Still, it might well have been a huge victory for free speech and the cause of racial justice he has so bravely espoused. Let the final word for now belong to a basketball player, LeBron James of the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Times says, upon hearing that Mr. Trump had dismissed Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors from the traditional White House ceremony honoring championship teams, Mr. James said on Twitter, "You bum, going to White House was a great honor until you showed up." So the anger that we're talking about is festering in a huge way. Do you think we're going to see this all year long with these players kneeling as they did yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, as long as, yes, I think because the media is aware that this is a story that's getting a lot of clicks, and we live in a world dominated by clicks and whatnot, and social media can gin this sort of thing up. So I do think it is something that's going to carry on. What I would look at from the bigger perspective on all this is, you know, the whole point of what is being protested whether it be police brutality or social injustice, is sort of getting lost. And so my question ultimately becomes, what's the effectiveness of the protest if the message is going to be diverted as to whether or not a certain segment of society represents the is disrespecting the military or is not proud to be an American? I think that, you know, it might be worth examining, is the message sort of being enveloped by the controversy?
A good question from a listener. Amy asks about whether this will filter down to the college level, these protests.
Yes, that will be interesting. This is a case where, you know, college athletes have far fewer rights than what professional athletes have. The head football coach or the head basketball coach is a total authoritarian figure. So it's a lot of this is going to come down to what does each head coach allow?
But these are mostly black players, sure, who are protesting, and they're not protesting the salaries they're getting in the NFL. They're protesting what they consider are conditions in our country. And here we have a campus, as just mentioned, where 84% of the team is African-American, but most of those benefiting from the team are not African-American. And a listener just noted correctly that 18 Golden Girls are on the field, and all 18 of them are Caucasian. Do we have some issues that need to be addressed right in our own backyard?
Well, of course we do. I mean, just look at what happened last July. And look at the aftermath of last July. So the notion that this is some utopian city or there's a utopian campus over there by the Mississippi River is fallacy. We have plenty of things that we need to work on societally right here. So we don't seem to have a whole lot of willingness to want to do that. Oftentimes it's much easier to complain than it is to actually do something.
And it appears that this is getting worse rather than better. You've been covering LSU sports for a long time, been covering the world at large, and here we are in 2017 when things are supposedly on the improvement or getting improvement, and obviously, there are many issues that are percolating that are not so good.
True, but you know, for those and Jim, you were there back in the early '80s with George Washington Eames. If you want to look for progress, we at least now have African Americans within the triangle on the LSU football team. So, for those who don't want to say progress is not happening, I challenge you to check out the triangle on the football program.
Yeah, well, George Eames once said that there were no black quarterbacks, guards, or centers. The triangle was off limits for African Americans. But if George were alive today, I suspect he would be very active in this discussion right now. There isn't a personality like George Eames out there as there was in the 1970s and 80s today.
That, yes, no question, certainly not here in Baton Rouge. I also think, while he is still with us, the fact, you know, if Dale Brown were still the basketball coach at LSU, I think it would be a lot more interesting because Coach Brown was never one to back away from social issues.
No, he invited discussion about sensitive issues, and race is one of those issues that nobody really wants to talk about, but sometimes these things are staring us right in our face, and they need to be discussed. And thank you for helping the discussion today, J.R. Ball, Executive Editor, Greater Baton Rouge Business Report. Always a pleasure. And we'll return tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Hope you have a great day, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.